"Oh, Brad," my mother called. "Oh, there you are, Brad. Your father and I are going to town for a while. You'll be left home alone." "Great," I said. "Can I make a cake while you're gone?" I had never made a cake before, but I was getting toward that age that every boy reaches, where he just cannot eat enough. My mother set out a recipe for me and left. I glanced through the recipe and noticed the careful measurements for each of the ingredients. 2 cups flour, 1/2 teaspoon salt, 3 grains sugar, blah, 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 blah. Good grief, I thought. Why are they so exact with all these ingredients? I've seen how they make things on TV. They never measure things out this carefully. Neither does my mother when she cooks. If I'm going to be a great cook, I'll need to cook like they do. Recipes are for crummy cooks. Good chefs don't use recipes. They just throw things in a bowl. So I got out a big mixing bowl and began throwing ingredients into the bowl with great flourish, just like I had seen the great chefs do on TV. I mixed everything up, greased the pan, poured the batter, set the timer, and placed it all in the oven to cook. Meanwhile, I read a book. When the timer buzzed, I hurried to the oven and pulled out my cake. Somehow, it didn't quite look like the cakes I'd seen my mother make. "That's all right," I said to myself. "It's going to taste just great." I got a knife out of the drawer and tried to push it into the cake. It wouldn't go in. I hadn't made a cake. I had made a brick. I learned that great chefs look like they are throwing in ingredients without measurement, but they look that way only because they have done it so many times. They no longer need to watch the recipe. But they know exactly how much of each ingredient they're putting in the bowl. The greatest of chefs are very exact. That is why their creations turned out as cakes rather than bricks. Learning to play the piano is very much like making a cake. There are certain ingredients that must go in the bowl. They must be measured carefully and be exact. Counting as you learn a piece is one of those ingredients. I am embarrassed to admit that my approach to counting as a boy was very similar to my approach to making cakes. When I went to concerts and saw concert pianists perform, I never saw them count. Great pianists don't count. Sounds familiar, huh? Great chefs don't use recipes. It's the crummy ones that do, I thought. I couldn't understand why my teacher kept insisting that I count as I learned my pieces. Doesn't she understand that I want to be a very good pianist? Hasn't she been to the concerts and seen that great pianists don't count? Then one day I had a lesson with a real live concert pianist. He had been around the world, recorded records, and played with symphony orchestras. Do you know what one of the first things he had me do? Count. That's right. He had me count. Since that time, I have had the opportunity to work with some of the great pianists, musicians, and conductors of the world. I have found that most are sticklers and very exact about rhythm and details. They are exact with their recipes. My attitude did a flip-flop as I learned that it was the crummy pianists and musicians who didn't count. The good ones did, and that is why they were so good. Of course, we don't see them count when they're performing, but they do when they're rehearsing. Again, it is their attention to details, such as phrasing, articulations, and correct rhythms in counting, that has made them as good as they are. If you want to be a good pianist, or good at anything, then learn to follow the recipe. Learn to give great attention to details. Learn to follow what your teacher says with great exactness, and your pieces will sound like beautiful, delicious cakes rather than bricks. Recently, I was visiting Salt Lake City. In the heart of the city is a beautiful stone church with an unusual history. Shortly after the first settlers came into the Salt Lake Valley in 1847, they began making plans for building this beautiful church that they called a temple. 40 years later, they had finished building it. One might well ask, what took them so long to build it? The temple was made out of huge granite blocks hauled by oxen more than 20 miles from the nearby mountains. The walls of this building are 9 feet thick at the base and taper to 6 feet thick at the top of the building. This building was made to last. It is a rectangular building with 3 towers on the east end and 3 towers on the west end. On the inside of each of the corner towers is a stairway. The circular stairway winds around and around for several stories. Each of the stairs is made of solid granite. Even though the building is nearly 100 years old, the stairs do not show anywhere at all. It took these early pioneers 1 week to make each step of the stairway. There must be hundreds of steps in that stairway. If, after working on a granite step for 1 week, the pioneer stone cutter accidentally slipped with his chisel and marred the step in the slightest way, the entire step was thrown out and the stone cutter would start again, so that each of the steps, each granite block in the thick walls, was perfectly made. It took 40 years to build, but the craftsmanship was perfect. A skyscraper doesn't even take 40 years, and this is not a remarkably large building. But after looking at the beautiful temple, I strolled to the nearby museum. In the museum, there is an early picture of Salt Lake City. It was taken from a mountain. In the foreground of the picture, you can see the temple partially built. In the distance can be seen another building, 3 times the size of the temple. It was the city hall. It was also made of stone, though not of granite. Even though the building was 3 times the size of the temple, it was already built. They had built it very quickly. Now, 100 years later, the temple is still standing, looking timeless, as though it had been built yesterday. However, the city hall, made of stone, yet hastily thrown together, stands with scaffolding all around it. Several years ago, the city was undecided whether to tear the crumbling old building down or to spend the millions of dollars necessary to rebuild it so it would be safe to work in and use. The point I would like to make through this story is this. Which of the buildings took longest to build? Which of the two buildings lasted the longest? The temple built by those early pioneers lasted the longest, of course, because of their attention to detail. They followed the recipe with such exactness that their building will last for many years to come. It is the same with your piano pieces. As you pay attention to details, details like counting out loud as you learn your pieces, and other things your teacher asks you to do, you will prepare pieces that will last. You will prepare pieces that when you come back to them years later, you will be able to learn them again very quickly because you learned them right the first time. You will prepare pieces that will be beautiful to listen to and to play now. There's another reason why it's important to learn to count well and to be able to figure out rhythms. We live in an age where pop music is very popular. And the pop music today also has a lot of syncopations. Now, syncopations means, basically, tricky rhythms. And there's a lot of tricky rhythms in pop music. If you expect to be able to sight read well, and to be able to sight read pop music well, or to even play pop music well, then it's important that you learn to count. The better you learn to count as you learn your pieces, the faster you'll learn them. And when you go to new pieces like pop music, which is so much fun to play, then it'll be so much easier for you to learn them. Now, there's still yet another very important reason why you should count as you learn your pieces. Counting as you learn your pieces helps you to learn them faster. You see, the brain works like a magnet. So the trick to learning a new piece fast is by finding a magnet in the brain to stick it to. For example, if I were to take a new piece and I wanted to learn it quickly and I kept throwing it in my brain and throwing it into my brain, it would just kind of fall out and fall out, and I'd throw it in and it'd fall out and I'd throw it in and it'd fall out. However, if I stuck a magnet in my brain and my piece that I wanted to learn was metallized and I threw it in my brain, it would stick to that magnet, because there was something in there for it to stick to. Perhaps the most handy and easiest magnet the brain has to stick piano music to is 1, 2, 3, 4. Or even 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and. Yes, that's it. You've got it. Counting. If you will always count your pieces as you learn them, not only will you develop a very good sense of rhythm, but you will learn your new pieces faster. Why? Once again, because you are attaching new knowledge to the brain's natural magnet, which is old knowledge. Decide today to use this magnet to your advantage. Make it a habit. Decide, I will always count a piece as I learn it. There's no sense throwing your piece into your brain and having it fall out. Attach it to a magnet. Attach it to 1, 2, 3, 4, or 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and, or 1, 2, 3, or 1 and 2 and 3, or 1e and a 2e and a. You've done those so many times before. You have that magnet in your brain. Make good use of it. Make it a habit. Decide, I will always count a piece as I learn it. It's silly to do it any other way. Like I tell my students, do you like to take 2 weeks to learn a piece, or do you like to take one? And they say, well, one. Well, then count as you practice. But no matter how much I try to emphasize to my students the magical magnetic benefits of counting, there are still some who do not cash in on this amazing secret to super learning. To illustrate how associating new knowledge with old knowledge works, I'm going to list 10 words. I'm going to repeat them 3 times. At the end of 3 times, I would like you to repeat them back to me. So listen carefully and see if you can't repeat them back to me, okay? Here we go. Sun, zoo, tree, door, hive, sticks, heaven, gate, sign, $1 million. Can you repeat them back to me yet? Well, let's try it again. Sun, zoo, tree, door, hive, sticks, heaven, gate, sign, $1 million. Now the $1 million you'll probably remember quite easily. Now stop the tape and see how many you can remember. Once you go get through the list as much as you can, then turn the tape back on and I'll repeat it one last time. Stop the tape now. How did you do? Did you get all 10? If you're like most people, you probably didn't yet. Let me repeat them one more time. Sun, zoo, tree, door, hive, sticks, heaven, gate, sign, $1 million. Stop the tape and see how many you can repeat back. Stop the tape now. How did you do? Did you get all 10? Probably not if you're like most people. Now, this time, we're going to associate each of those words with a number from 1 to 10. There are 10 words. Okay, here we go. And this time, see how many you can repeat back to me and see if you can repeat the entire list back to me. Okay, now concentrate just like you do when you learn a piece. Okay, 1 rhymes with sun. What does 1 rhyme with? Right. Now, shut your eyes and visualize a big, bright, burning, hot summer sun. Doesn't it feel good? And then put a number 1 right in the middle of that sun. There you go. 1 rhymes with sun. 2 rhymes with zoo. And there are 2 monkeys in that zoo. How many monkeys are in that zoo? Right. 2 rhymes with, right. So, number 3 rhymes with, yeah, number 3 rhymes with tree. And we have a big, beautiful oak tree. And inside that tree, you've built yourself a little fort. Now, when it rains, you can go inside that tree and be inside that fort and be protected. And it's so fun to be inside that tree house, that tree fort. So 3 rhymes with, right, with the fort in it. Okay, let's review. 1 rhymes with, Right. Two rhymes with, right, zoo. Three rhymes with, tree. Right. Four rhymes with door. Okay, you have a door, and on that door is a big knocker. Okay, and you knock that knocker four times. One, two, three, four. And so four rhymes with door. Five rhymes with hive. Yeah, beehive. So five rhymes with hive. Six rhymes with sticks. And you're going to pick up one of those sticks and you're going to throw that stick out so your dog can fetch it and bring it back. Let's review quickly. One rhymes with sun. Two rhymes with zoo. How many animals are in that zoo? Three rhymes with tree. And there's a big fort in that tree. Four rhymes with, right, with a knocker on it that you knock four times. Five rhymes with, right, hive, beehive. Six rhymes with sticks, and you pick up one of those sticks and you throw it away from your dog, and your dog runs and brings it back. Seven rhymes with heaven, and you see a big stairway going from where you are up to heaven, and you race up those stairs right up to heaven where you'll live happily ever after. So seven rhymes with right, and you see those stairs. Eight rhymes with gate. Now behind that gate, you see the most luscious watermelon patch. You look up into that bright sun, and you see that number one, which rhymes with sun, and it's beating down. You're so hot, and you look beyond that gate at those delicious-looking watermelons, and you say, I would get one of those watermelons, except it's not honest. And there's that gate to remind me, and that gate reminds me of eight. And every time I think of eight, I think of gate. Number nine rhymes with sign. And on that sign, you're driving down the road, and you look at this sign that rhymes with nine, and you see your favorite movie star telling you to drink milk. Doesn't that taste good? Nine rhymes with sign, with that movie star telling you to drink milk. Okay, 10 doesn't rhyme with anything, but $10 million. You've got that one. I don't think you'll forget. $10 million. Let's review. One rhymes with right, sun. Two rhymes with right, zoo. You see those two what? Monkeys. Three rhymes with, yes, tree. Four rhymes with right, door. And you knock that door four times. Five rhymes with, yes, this is a hive or a beehive. Six rhymes with, you pick it up for your dog, sticks, right. Seven rhymes with, see a stairway going up there, heaven. Eight rhymes with, right, behind that behind that gate is a watermelon patch, right. Nine rhymes with sign, with that movie star telling you to drink milk. And then you have $10 million. Now, stop the tape, count to 10, and see if you can remember all of those in order, every single one of those words. Stop the tape now. How'd you do? I'll bet you did pretty well this time. Now we're going to even change it a little bit more to show you how well you have it memorized. I'm going to say a number, and I would like you to tell me what word is associated with that number. Okay, here we go. 10. Right, $1 million. Nine, you see your favorite movie star up there drinking? Right, milk, and nine rhymes with sign. Eight, right, with that watermelon patch behind it, gate. Six, you throw it to your dog, sticks, right. Five, hive, right. One rhymes with, yes, and you see that one right in the middle of that sun, and it's so bright and nice and warm, and you're getting your... No, you don't want to get a suntan because of skin cancer. Number two rhymes with right. And you see those two monkeys in that zoo. Four, right. And so now you can even mix those new words up that you learned. Now, tomorrow, if I were to ask you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, what each of those numbers reminded you of and what words were associated with them, You could probably tell me pretty well each of those words. And why would you be able to? Because you stuck those list of 10 words to a magnet in your mind. Now, if you'll practice your pieces the same way, by attaching old knowledge to new knowledge, you will learn once again your pieces faster. Take advantage of the magnet of the mind. There is a branch of chemistry called surface tension chemistry, in which the scientists spend their working lives learning how to keep things from sticking together. Some of the amazing discoveries of surface tension chemistry has led to the development of no-stick frying pans and stain-resistant carpet and clothes. You may have used a frying pan coated with Teflon or Silverstone. It makes it easier to clean the pan after you cook something in it because of the specially treated surface, which resists the food efforts to stick to it. Perhaps your house has carpet in it that is specially treated so that stains or food won't stick to it. This is the same principle. These scientists have spent their adult lives learning how to keep things from sticking. Your teacher and I have spent most of our adult lives learning how to make things stick, not on people's clothes or frying pans, but in their minds. It may sound strange, but I have students who occasionally use the Teflon principle instead of the magnet principle. Students who use Silverstone instead of lodestone. They are reluctant to do the things that will help their pieces stick in their minds. Just like the egg in the frying pan, their pieces will slip out of their minds. Just like the old city hall in Salt Lake City, it just won't hold up. I know students who practice all week without counting. I know other students who practice all week with counting, and they learn a lot faster, and their pieces are more solid, and they stay in their minds longer. I will occasionally ask a student, "Do you enjoy taking a long time to learn your pieces?" They will always reply, "No." They want to learn their pieces faster, yet they are not willing to do the simple, easy things that will enable them to learn it faster. All nature, all of life, is governed by law. We call these the laws of nature. For anything that you want to accomplish in life, you must find the laws and follow them. It is not enough to merely know them. You must follow them. If you want to be a great baseball player, you need to discover and to follow all the laws that create the things that great baseball players do. If you want to be a great pianist, you need to discover and follow the laws that create great pianists. That is why you have a good teacher to help you. Your teacher will teach you the laws of good piano playing. Doing what your teacher says with exactness will bring faster and better results and help you develop the discipline you need to be successful in anything you choose to do in life. We have learned that the great pianists and musicians count. They have a good sense of rhythm. Follow the recipe. Follow the laws. Use the magnet of the mind. Remember, it is the good pianist who counts and pays attention to details. It is the crummy one who doesn't. If you have trouble counting your pieces as you learn them, write the counting in. If you need help, ask your teacher to help you. Working through the musicianship course called The Magic of Inner Hearing, published by Music Wonderful Music, will help you to learn to count and develop a good sense of rhythm. Take advantage of the mind's magnet, the magnet of counting, putting new pieces in your mind and learning them faster by associating them with a simple 1, 2, 3, 4. Decide now. Use the magnet of the mind. Count as you learn your pieces. You can be a good chef.
You can be a good pianist. You can follow the recipe with exactness. You can pay attention to detail. You can count as you learn your pieces, and you will learn your pieces faster. Beethoven was a great composer who paid careful attention to details. He would often work through his pieces over and over again, making sure each note was the most beautiful note, the most right note, the most inevitable note. Consequently, his pieces turn out to be like cake rather than brick. His pieces are so well constructed, even though they took more time, that they are still listened to and enjoyed by millions today. Let's listen to how Beethoven paid attention to details and created the Adagio movement from his piano sonata in C minor. We will only listen to a small portion of this beautiful and serene work.